This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com.
Welcome to Ramadan Remedies for Your Marriage. We're going to be starting in a few minutes, inshallah. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Wassalatu wassalamu ala Rasulullah. I really hope that you all are being inspired to take this opportunity in the month of Ramadan when we are gaining that closeness, when we're getting that spiritual high in our life, and we extend that into our relationship, especially in the marriage. I think that it's a lot of times it's overlooked. We put our relationships on hold. We have everything on a back burner. But I think that the most important thing we can do is to take this opportunity, as we are improving ourselves, as we're gaining connection to Allah, we gain that connection with our spouse. And so we've talked in a few of the Ramadan remedies for your marriage. We've talked about how we can build that relationship, why this is the best time to build our marriage, because we have this opportunity, we have that spiritual high. And so today I'm going to talk to you about having the husna dhan, the good opinion. The good opinion of Allah and a good opinion of your spouse. So I want to know that this Ramadan, when you're making dua, I know you make dua for so many things in your life. Are you making sincere dua for your marriage? Are you making dua with that conviction that it's being heard and it's being answered? Or are you praying and just thinking, you know, what's the point? It's over. Nothing can help. Nothing's going to make it better. If you're thinking to yourself that it's impossible to save my marriage, then you are limiting Allah. You are creating boundaries for Allah. And we need to make sure that we don't have any limitations on Allah. If you think that your marriage is a lost cause, then what is your opinion of Allah? I believe that miracles happen when we have strong conviction, when we make dua with that certainty, when we know for sure that our dua is being heard and Allah has the ability to answer it. All He has to do is say kun. That's it. And then your problems will be gone, and the obstacles will be removed from your path. The knots will be untied. So it's really important to pray with that conviction. I can give you some examples. When miracles occurred, it happened because the individuals that were making the dua, they had that conviction. For instance, Musa alayhi salam, he was being followed by the most ferocious army, and he got to a point, he got to the Red Sea, and he felt like everyone thought that they were doomed, and yet he knew that Allah is with him, and he didn't give up. He did not falter. He did not get hopeless. And because of that, Allah created the miracle and parted the Red Sea. When Maryam alayhi salam was in the middle of the desert giving birth without any medical equipment, no physicians, no husband, no epidural, no Lamaze class, and she was by herself, and she was struggling. She had that conviction that Allah hears her dua, and Allah at that time said, shake the palm tree, and the dates fell. Now, how hard is it to shake a palm tree? It takes several healthy men to do that, and it's just an indication that you need to make an effort. You need to take that first step in order for the du'as to be answered. And the best example of husna dhan, a good opinion of Allah, is Ibrahim alayhi salam. He's being thrown into the fire, and he does not falter. He does not waver. He does not question or get hopeless. Our situations are much easier than what these individuals have faced. And as he's being shot into the fire, he is firm on his belief that Allah has his back and Allah is going to be there for him. And so at that point, the miracle occurs that Allah says, make the fire Bardan wa salaman, make it cool and comfortable for Ibrahim. And he did not get affected by the fire. And so it is all about having the husna dhan. Because Allah says in the Hadith Qudsi, the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam said that Allah the Most High said, I am as my servant thinks of me and expects of me. I am with him when he mentions me. If he mentions me to himself, I mention him to myself. And if he mentions me in an assembly, I mention him in an assembly greater than it, meaning by the angels. If he draws near to me a hand's length, I draw near to him an arm's length. And if he comes to me walking, I go to him at speed. Isn't that amazing? I love this hadith. And it's reminding us that Allah is as we think of him. So if we have that find that we have a great opinion of Allah, if we know that he is the most merciful and he is the most powerful, and all that it takes is for him to say, kun fayakun, and it is done, then we will see the results of that. You know, our perspectives in life really affect the way we view everything. If you have a pessimistic outlook and you see everything in a negative light, then you're going to be miserable. I'm sure all of you know individuals like that. Anything they look at, every person they come across, all they can do is look for flaws. They're a magnet for flaws and negativity. Anything they see the most negative points in it. And those individuals are miserable, and they make everyone around them miserable. Now, if you choose to have an optimistic outlook and you search for positivity, you are a magnet for positivity, whether that's in people, you search for goodness in them, whether that's in your situation, even if you're in a hard situation, you think about, you know, what is khair in this? What is good? What can I learn? How can I become a better person through this? What is the wisdom? When you start doing that, then you are going to be a much happier and more content individual. The perspective that we have on Allah is so critical in how we view our life. I want to ask you this. Do you view Allah in a positive light? Now, you might automatically say, yes, of course I do. Of course I view Allah in a positive light. But I want you to think about the times when you were tested, when something very precious to you was taken away, when you didn't get that promotion that you were expecting, when you lost a loved one, when things happened around you that you felt that you just felt like you're in complete darkness. Maybe you got a divorce. Maybe you had a big fight. Maybe things just fell apart. I want to ask you then, did you still have a good opinion of Allah? Did you see, did your feeling towards him alter? Because I find that people react to hardship in one of two ways. There are those individuals that when they are faced with hardship, they get closer and closer to their Creator. They realize how small they are, how incapable, and they just humble themselves and they submit more than ever, and they feel that that is their rope to Allah, and they hold on to it as tight as they can because they know that they have no one else. Then there are those individuals that when they are tested, even slightly, when something slightly is different from what they had expected, if maybe they didn't get, let's say, the promotion, or something didn't go exactly the way they wanted, then immediately their whole iman collapses. It's like their iman is based on the things that they have or the people who are around them. It's not as solid. And you find that those individuals, as soon as they're tested, as soon as they're put in the fire to be purified, they falter, they give up, they throw in the towel, they stop praying, they think that, you know, my du'as are not being answered. What's the point? Why do I even continue doing this? I'm not being answered. I'm not even being heard. You know, I had a client who came to me and she was so completely devastated because a few weeks before she was about to get married. Now imagine this. You know how sisters, how they get into the whole marriage preparation, how excited they are, the dress, the party, the invitation, all of the preparation. She had gone through all that. And she thought that she had the just, you know, an amazing guy. A few weeks before the wedding, the guy called it off. Her fiancé called off the wedding. He's like, I can't do this. I cannot do this, because she had a really difficult personality, and she had a very entitled personality. She thought that she can act however she wants and everyone has to just kind of comply. And when he called off the wedding, that was like a huge wake-up call. It was like a slap in the face. She just couldn't believe it. She always had everything she ever wanted. She was beautiful. She was wealthy, spoiled. Everything that she wanted, she got. And then suddenly here, this guy who she thought was her dream guy basically called it off. And at that point is when I met her. And she was so down. And she had recently gotten news that a family member was very sick, had a tumor. She was about to lose a family member as well. So not only was her love life in trouble, her family life was in trouble. It was like a huge wake-up call. And that's scary. That's scary, because if you don't have the iman, if you have not been working hard and accumulating the iman throughout the years, then something like that hits and you hit rock bottom. And that's what happened to her. And when she felt that her world was falling apart, she became so desperate. She became suicidal. She lost hope. She felt that Allah had abandoned her. So she's like, you know what? I'm abandoning the prayer. I'm abandoning the prayer because I don't feel like it's making a difference. And I can tell you that so many of my clients have gone through this. So many have told me that, you know, sister, I stopped praying. It's been a few months that I stopped praying because I felt that, you know, everything is going wrong within my life. I felt that the du'as were not effective. And I tell you that what happened with this sister can happen to you. With, you know, alhamdulillah, with therapy and attending halaqas and being realigned, being reconnected to the purpose of life. You know, the purpose of life is not just finding a dream man or a dream girl. The purpose of life is not just simply getting degrees and having a good life and having children. The purpose of life is so much greater than that. And it is about finding ourselves and finding our connection with Allah, worshiping Him in everything that we do. And if we don't have that, if we lose that connection, we are completely lost. And so when she got realigned with her Creator, when I encouraged her to do acts of charity, to go out there, to work with the orphans, to ask herself, why did this happen? Not why, but what is the wisdom? She kept asking, why did this happen to me? It's like, why did this happen? And you know, everyone asks these questions, like, why me? Why did terrible things always happen to me? You need to rephrase that and ask, what is the wisdom? What is the wisdom in this happening? And when she started asking that, it led her to an epiphany. She just woke up and realized that she had been leading a life that was not pleasing to Allah. She was treating people so badly. She did not have the akhlaq, she did not have the kindness, and this actually helped. It helped her to totally transform herself. She transformed herself spiritually. She regained that connection with Allah. And she transformed herself emotionally. She started being emotionally available. She was kind. And she changed herself completely. And what is amazing about this is that since she started to have a good opinion of Allah and she regained her faith in Allah, Allah rewarded her in an amazing way. I got a phone call a few months ago and she called me and said, you know what? You're right. I said, About what? Okay, I know I'm right, but what? What specifically are you referring to? And she said, well, you know, I met someone much better than that guy, my ex-fiancé, and we're getting married. And she sent me her wedding pictures, and she looked beautiful, and they just, it was so happy, such a happy ending, mashallah, tabarakallah. And that's because of the fact that she realigned herself. She went from being hopeless, pessimistic, thinking that her world had collapsed, which I'm sure many of you may be in a similar situation, maybe not specifically, you know, having a fiance call off the wedding, but I'm sure many of you are being challenged. Maybe your marriage is on the rocks. Maybe talks of divorce have come up, which you never thought you would even consider it. Maybe it's the fact that you're in a financial dilemma, or your kids are turning out in a way that you just never expected. I mean, I get these calls on a daily basis where people have hit rock bottom, where people have found out things about their spouse that is just completely devastating. And you may feel that, what's the point? I just had a sister come in, and she had found out some horrible things about her husband, and it really shook her. Here's a sister who's been practicing, she's chaste all her life, she's obedient, such a committed sister. But sometimes these incidents shake a person to the core. It shakes a person to the point where she's like, I don't know about my belief anymore. And I told her, what do you mean? You're not going to give up your faith just because of one man. Doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what he did. You have to keep that connection. You were, alhamdulillah, you were on the path. He was the one who transgressed. So we can't ever lose sight of that. And alhamdulillah, I saw her yesterday, and she said, you know what? I'm committed. I have that trust in Allah. I'm not going to let go of the rope of Allah. So you can't let go of the rope of Allah either. And you know, the amazing thing about the story that I just shared with you is that she changed herself. And when you change yourself, when you recognize your shortcomings and you start making changes, then Allah will make the changes in your condition. And Allah says, إن الله لا يغير ما بقوم حتى يغيروا ما بأنفسهم. That indeed, Allah will not change the condition of the people until they change what is in themselves. I think that this is such a powerful verse, and it should be plastered on every masjid. I saw this in one of the posts. A friend of ours showed us from Sydney, Australia, that it's at the entrance of the masjid. And I thought, what a profound verse. To walk into the masjid and realize the change starts with yourself. You want a better marriage, you want better work, you want a better family, whatever it is, you want better health, whatever it is that you're asking for this Ramadan, whatever it is you're crying for and you're in sujood for a long period of time, you want a spouse, you want a child, you want whatever it is, then start with yourself. Make those changes, make the commitment. I mean, this is the ultimate month to make that change. Now, if we're not going to change now, when are we going to change? This is the time when all our focus is on basically self-improvement. I mean, we think of it as that cleansing. It's a month of Quran. We are reading. We're gaining that spirituality. We're gaining that closeness to Allah. And all of that, why does Allah have us do that? We need to ask that. What is the purpose of all of these things? He is not in need of our prayers. He's not in need of our fasting. It's all just to change us. It's to mold us. It's to purify us and to make us have a better character. It's to make us have to improve ourselves. So if we make that our intention, then you will see that Allah will put so much barakat. If you are recognizing your shortcomings this Ramadan and you realize, you know what, I really do have a temper. I need to calm it down. I need to learn how to have anger management. Maybe your your shortcoming is that you're lying. Maybe it is the fact that you're wasting a lot of time. Maybe you're rude and disrespectful. Maybe you feel entitled. Maybe you feel like, you know, everyone should listen to you and you manipulate others. Whatever it is, just be honest with yourself. Be honest and make those changes. Because as soon as you make the changes in yourself, then whatever your situation is, Allah is suddenly going to change it around for you. I've seen it. I've witnessed it in my own life. I've witnessed it with thousands of people I have worked with, that it just takes that commitment, the commitment to change yourself. Now, not only should we have husnul dhan for Allah, we need to have husnul dhan for our spouse as well. So what does it mean to have a good opinion of your spouse? It means giving them the benefit of the doubt. It means making excuses for them. So knowing that they're not intentionally angering you, hurting you, driving you up the wall. They're not doing it intentionally, hopefully. Okay, there may be a few that may. But for the most part, I think that most people go on with their life not realizing how they are hurting their spouse. I see it. I see it in therapy sessions when I'm doing the couples therapy, and how one spouse, let's say the wife, is in tears and she's breaking down and she just feels like, oh my God, he does this on purpose, and he wants to destroy me. He wants to hurt me. And he's sitting there looking like, I don't know what she's talking about. I have no intention of doing that. And you see that there's just a misinterpretation. If you have a positive outlook on your spouse, and you feel that whatever they're doing, there's a positive intent, that there is husnul dhan, that is such an important aspect of our deen, of our beliefs, right? Because a lot of people are very suspicious. A lot of people are so negative. They just automatically assume the worst. They see someone, oh, he didn't say hi. Ah, look, he has something against me. He's plotting against me. I just know it. Yep. You know, that sister, oh, she didn't give salams, or she didn't come and help out, or she is not, like they say, volunteering. I know she has it in for me. Well, we need to have that, give that benefit of the doubt. And those individuals who are struggling maybe with their pride, and they don't want to initiate the salams, or they don't want to help out, or, you know, those individuals have to work on themselves as well, so that you don't create this negative emotions in other people. So it's about looking at a situation and always reframing, always looking for that silver lining. So if your spouse, for instance, comes home late, right? So instead of jumping to the conclusion that I know there's someone else, oh my God, I know. I mean, he told me he's going to be home an hour ago. He's late. So definitely there's someone else. And so you're creating this scenario, based on assumptions, based on false information. You're getting worked up, you're angry. Meanwhile, what is the guy doing? He's at work, working hard, trying to make a living, trying to pay the bills. And by the time he comes home, you are furious. You're furious, and you let him have it, and he doesn't know what hit him, right? You have to have that husnul dhan. You have to give them the benefit of the doubt. Just think to yourself, you know, maybe he got caught up. Maybe there was a phone call. Maybe there was a meeting. Maybe there's some extra work that came up. Make those kind of excuses. If you call your spouse and she's not answering the phone, don't automatically think, oh, she's disrespecting me. Oh, I know. She's just playing games. She's just trying to ignore me. Just assume that, you know, maybe her phone is on silent. Maybe she was at the masjid, she kept it on silent, and now she doesn't hear the phone. Maybe she's busy with the kids. Maybe the four kids she has at home, and she's changing someone's diaper, she doesn't get a chance to answer the phone. So don't automatically assume that your spouse is out to get you. One client I have that, as soon as she sees her spouse go on the phone or on the computer, she freaks out. She just immediately thinks that he's chatting with another girl. And this causes a lot of tension in a marriage. When you are constantly being suspicious, when you're constantly getting angered based on your assumptions. There's no validity. There's no validity. I mean, that's a whole nother story if there is something actually happening. I'm talking about individuals who are innocent of doing anything wrong. They're going to work, coming back, or they're at home taking care of the kids. There's no reason to be suspicious, and you still are suspicious because of your own negativity, because you just assume that people cannot be good. And that will have a very negative impact on your marriage. So what is the benefit of having this husna then, thinking the best of your spouse? First and foremost, you are going to be at peace. You are going to feel at peace because you're not creating these scenarios in your mind and getting angry and frustrated and sad. Second of all, you're not suspicious. You're not suspicious. You're not assuming the worst. Third is that you are protecting your marriage, because if you are constantly thinking the worst of your spouse, you know what one brother told me? It's like, you know, if my wife is always assuming that I'm up to no good. And he is very careful. I mean, the guidelines he tell me and how he interacts with his coworkers, with other females. And he said, you know, I mean, I don't know what to do. I take all the precautions. I'm so loyal, and yet she assumes the worst. And if we do that, what happens with a child if we're constantly assuming, let's say a good child that's truthful, that's studious, that listens to you, obeys you, and you always assume that, oh, I know that you're chatting with someone, aren't you? You're meeting someone behind my back. You are doing this, you're doing that. They're going to be like, oh my God, I might as well go and do it and at least have some fun. I mean, I'm already being prosecuted. I'm already being found guilty. So I might as well then go live it up. This is how some spouses may feel, because they're like, regardless of what I do, the suspicion is there. So we really need to be careful about this, that we don't breed. First of all, don't allow any reason for your spouse to be suspicious of you. You go to the bathroom with your phone, or you're all like cautious, the phone rings and you're like, ah, you jump and you grab and you freak out if your spouse looks at it. I mean, this is an indication something's going on that shouldn't be going on. Okay, so if nothing's going on, then don't react like that. Be completely transparent with your phone, with your computer, with all the things that you have, so that your spouse, you don't lead them to being suspicious. And if you have no reason, if there is no evidence that your spouse has done anything, then stop with the suspicions. Just try to have that trust, because by not having the trust, you're going to break the relationship completely. So you protect the marriage by having the husna dhan, and you prevent fights and arguments and lots of headaches. Because as soon as you have this, you know, su'a dhan, where you think evil of your spouse, then that's really going to affect you. You're going to think evil. You're going to attack them. You're going to confront them. What is this? What is the meaning of this? Why do you do this all the time? They're going to be defensive. I didn't do this. What are you thinking? And then, like some clients tell me, they don't speak for three days to a week. One client just told me it's like it's been 2 weeks that they haven't talked. This is not good. This is not going to make you have a better marriage. So we need to definitely cultivate the husna dhan and have that positive outlook towards our spouse. Now, here are some of the action items. Okay, this is what I want you to do, inshallah. Next time you're frustrated from your spouse, instead of jumping the gun and thinking they're out to get you and they're trying to destroy you, make an excuse. Make an excuse for them. Think good thoughts. Ease your mind. Ease your mind. Ease your heart. You are instigating a lot of this yourself. I see this with people that I work with all the time. They are creating drama after drama after drama. And the spouse is just sitting there like, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? I have done nothing. And my spouse is creating all of this in their mind. So you're frustrated from your spouse, but have the husnadhan. Have husnadhan to Allah. Think the best of Allah. Don't limit him. Don't limit him. All it takes for him to say is kun. So if you have an issue, if you have a problem, if something needs to be resolved, just turn to him. Turn to him and don't think, oh, I'm too bad. I'm too, you know, I've sinned too badly. So I can't be, Allah's not going to forgive me. Who are you to say what Allah will or will not do? Right? You're talking about the most merciful. And if he chooses to forgive you, then think of him in the best way, because he is as you think of him. So if you're limiting his forgiveness, that's how it's going to be towards you. Expand it. Think that there is nothing that Allah can't do. There is no prayer that can't be answered. Pray with that kind of conviction and you will see miracles happen in your life, in your marriage, with your kids. It is just having that conviction and being optimistic. It's rare to find practicing Muslims who are optimistic. Sadly, I find that many people do the rituals, they have the outward appearance, they have, you know, they have the check marks, right? All the things, check, 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 check. But then when it comes to their views of other people, very negative. Views of being judgmental of every person they see, looking and you know, searching for flaws in people, in places, in things, and that they're just breeding negativity. So let's make it our goal this Ramadan that we become more optimistic, that we're more positive. And I know that it's hard for some people. Maybe they grew up with very negative parents. Maybe that's your personality. But you know what? Change it. Because it's not going to do you any good. And we can't just say, well, Allah, this is my personality. This is the way I am. What can I do? Well, Allah will say, change yourself. This is our mission. Our mission is to live by the part of ourself that is the best. We need to live to a higher standard. If we are, you know, always in the habit of being pessimistic and always whining, catch yourself. Catch yourself the next time you're about to whine or nag or yell or scream or whatever it is. Just catch yourself and say, Ya Allah, please help me. There's so many times I've been in sujood and I ask Allah, replace this that is in my heart with something that is better. And you will be amazed what happens. If you do that in tahajjud and there's something you're working on in yourself and you ask Allah, say, Ya Allah, remove this from my heart. Whatever it is I'm feeling, whatever it is, just take it away and replace it with something better. And miraculous things happen. So have husnadhan of Allah. Pray with conviction and certainty. You have to pray with conviction and certainty that your dua is not only being heard, but it can be answered. And that is the distinction between duas being answered and not. I mean, there's a long list of criteria for duas to be answered. But one of them is to have the conviction. One of them is to know that Allah is listening to you and hears you and is capable of answering it. Pray for your marriage. You know, there's a long list of things people pray for. Pray for their kids. They pray for their wealth. They pray for their families. But you know, how many of you have made dua? Allah, put that rahmah and the rahmah and the mercy, the mawadda in our marriage. Ya Allah, remove this this constricted heart that I have. Ya Allah, help me to forgive. Ya Allah, soften his heart. Ya Allah, soften her heart. How many times have you found yourself making sincere dua for the marriage? You know, I find that a lot of times people overlook this very important step. A lot of times they bring up divorce like that. And it's just, you know, this not going well, next. You know, just let's end it. Let's get out. Any relationship that you will be in will have a set of unsolvable problems. And it may not be the same set of problems. It's going to be a whole new set of problems. And you have no idea how much worse it might be. So why not stick with it? Do your best and try to make the marriage that you have more beneficial and more fruitful. Also, if you need someone, if you need to have a step-by-step approach in learning how to have this good marriage, how maybe you didn't have good role models, maybe you don't have the examples, maybe you're completely lost. I know I was just working with an individual this week who said, you know, I really had no idea. Anything that I was teaching them, they're like, wow, I wish I knew this. I wish I knew this 10 years ago. I wish I knew not to be so suspicious of my spouse. I wish I knew how to make him feel appreciated. I wish that I had given that time and attention and the affection. I messed up. And then it's too late. So I really encourage all of you, if you need that extra help to get the marriage. I have an online marriage program. It's the five pillars of marriage.com. And alhamdulillah, this has helped so many hundreds of people save their marriages. And I'm sure it could help your marriage as well. I'm going to open it up to questions now. See if there are any questions that we can take. All right. Okay, this question is from a brother. How do I learn to be a better partner in terms of day-to-day affairs so that my spouse does not feel stressed out? What a nice question to ask. Well, just the fact that you care enough to ask this question, kudos to you. You know, you need to find out from your spouse what kind of help they need. I think communication is really important. Don't try to guess. You know, it's a lot of things can be done by trial and error, but I think basically being there for your spouse, making sure that whether it's the chores around the house, whether it is the responsibility with the kids, I think women really appreciate it when they feel that their spouse is attentive. I have a few clients that I'm really impressed with their level of involvement in the household. They will, you know, they will help out, whether it's with the cooking, they may help out with, you know, doing the dishes from time to time, taking the kids out. So ask specifically what your spouse will need. I'm not sure if you're married right now or not, but once you do get married, you can ask. And then just be attentive. Just anticipate the need of your spouse. I think that's a really good point. If when you're in your own world, if you're just sitting there on your laptop, on your phone, and you're just chatting, and you're oblivious of the house around you, you're oblivious of the kids, you're oblivious of the responsibilities, your spouse is going to feel like you don't care. So we need to make sure that we're attentive to our spouse. Inshallah, may Allah give you a good, righteous spouse, and hopefully you learn to have a very good relationship with one another, inshallah. All right, let's see the next question. I can't let things go. All right, sister. I know it's hard. I know it is, but you know, the most important thing is to be able to let it go. And you know, when you can let it go is when you've had a resolution. When you feel like, okay, I've been heard, it's been understood, and now we have some kind of an agreement, and then we can let go. It's hard to let go when those steps have not been taken. That's why, like in pillar four, which is conflict resolution in my program, I talk about step-by-step characteristics you need to have to resolve a conflict, then how to solve the problem. Because if you do all that, then the letting go part becomes a lot easier because you don't feel that you are being wronged in any way. You don't feel that, oh, I'm misunderstood. So if you take those steps about expressing your needs and then resolving the conflict, then the letting go part becomes a lot easier because you feel like, okay, we have a solution now. So can you still hear me? All right. Let's see. Okay. Let go things as you want Allah to let things go for you on the day of judgment. Okay, that's a good reminder. If we want to be forgiven, remember last time, Tuesday, I was talking about forgiveness and that if we want Allah to forgive us, then we need to definitely forgive our spouse, because constantly reminding them, you know, we had a therapy session and, you know, the sister was talking about something and she was so fired up and she was talking about it and she was so angry and she was so fired up. And the brother's like, this is about 10 years ago. You know, he was a little bit frustrated. He's like, okay, if you want to bring this up again, that's fine. But it happened 10 years ago. So this kind of perpetual bringing up problems from the past, it's not healthy. I mean, what's the point? You know, I see so many couples. I just want them to just get along, because I find that there's no real major issues going on. Sometimes it's just a matter of some differences, maybe personality differences. And they're still like talking about divorce after only a few years of marriage. So I really hope that we can work on ourselves, forgive, and let go. Let's see if there are any other questions. Okay. Let's see. All right. I'm searching for the questions. If you have any questions, if you want to write them now, and I'll be happy to answer them. Okay, this one is saying, I need anger management. I can get very mad. I was like that yesterday. Okay, it went away. Let's see. All right. So anger management, it's a big one. It is a big one in marriages. I think that a lot of people, let's see, I was like that yesterday. It's jumping around. wish I could change that. I have improved a lot, but I also have a lot of social problems. Worst, I kind of let things go. Okay. So with the anger management, really, really try to work on yourself, because each time you get angry, it's like a bulldozer in the relationship. You're building, and then you yell and you scream and you throw certain things out, then that really damages. I mean, I just had a client tell me that, you know, their wife, every time she gets angry, she just starts calling him names and yelling and screaming. And, you know, over time, that's really going to get to a person. You know, it affects their self-esteem. It affects the way they feel about you. So I have an anger management. I did a two-part TV show. It's on my website, halabanani.com. It's for free. You can watch those, because I go into depth about it. But really hold yourself accountable. Maybe even, you know, tell your spouse, I'm trying to work on my anger. Please help me. This is what you could do to, when I'm in that state, what you can do that will, you know, ease my pain. Maybe just a bit like a big hug or reassuring words or something like that. But definitely, that's so good that you recognize that. I'm proud of you for recognizing it, because some people are like, I have a problem. What problem? It's all him. He needs to change, right? So the fact that you recognize you have a problem, that means that you're a big person, mashallah, and you're halfway there. So now it's just a matter of learning the skills and then applying it. Okay. It is hard to find a good resolution and solve the conflict. If I'm not able to find this resolution for me, it's quite impossible to let go. It's really hard. I always trying to solve the conflict, but sometimes it is not possible. It is difficult to accept the reality as it is. I pray to have the strength. Okay, yes, like I was saying, you do need to find some kind of resolution. And you have to also realize that there are some problems that are not solvable, right? There are certain things that you're just not going to change. You're not going to be able to get around it. Maybe it's the fact that you're living with your in-laws. Okay, maybe you just, that's not something you're going to be able to eliminate, and it's causing you stress. So it's a matter of changing yourself, changing your reaction to the situation. And if you can do that, then you will definitely improve the situation. Okay. All right. I always saw my mother suffering in marriage. My father is really different kind of person. He doesn't even respect us. He doesn't consider us anything. He is good to his friends, but not with the family. Very difficult to tolerate him. You know, it is very hard to have parents who are not good role models. And, you know, you see these behaviors where they're not being kind or respectful. And you can do one of two things. Either you can just feel sorry for yourself and think, oh no, I'm doomed. I never had a good example. Or you can feel that, you know what, I'm going to use them as an example of what not to do. You know, I had a supervisor when I was doing my internship at the VA hospital, and she was not the best supervisor. And at first, I was a little bit frustrated because I was so eager, so enthusiastic to learn. I was like ready to, like a sponge, wanted to soak it all in. And then I saw her behavior, her character, the way she interacted with the, you know, the patients in the hospital. I was just like floored by it. So I decided, you know what, I'm going to learn what not to do. So whatever she did, I did the opposite, and I got great results. So you can just do that with your parents and then learn. I mean, that's why it's so important. Getting the marriage program, it's online. You do it at your own pace. Then you can learn step by step. No one taught you, but you can learn now. And that, I think that's a really important part of this process. Let's see, what else do we have here? Okay. So many times people ask me that this, you know, how do you cultivate being a positive person? You know, and I think it's just about asking yourself the right questions, asking yourself, you know, what is good about this person? What are their strengths? You know, and sometimes when I ask, it's so funny sometimes because I ask them, you know, what do you like about your spouse? And they're completely stuck. They have nothing to say. It's like nothing. It's like, you're a good father. It's like, no, but what about me? Me as a person, what do you like? What is it in my character? And they get stuck because a lot of times people are just, you know, like a magnet for negativity, and then they blow it up 20 by 20. So try to ask the questions like, what do I like about my spouse? What are his strengths? What are the positive traits? And that will help you to be more positive. Okay, so looking for more questions. I always listen before I sleep. Okay. Oh, let's see. Do I always have to look good when my husband comes home? It's hard with children, especially when you don't have family here. All right. Well, I know it's not easy. I have three kids myself, and I know the challenges of being a mom. You know what? You don't have to be like a supermodel, but take 5 minutes to maybe change out of your sweats, maybe put a dab of lipstick, maybe like brush your hair. You know, you don't have to be decked out, right? But it's just a matter of having the courtesy to look presentable. You know, the same kind of courtesy you would have if a girlfriend was coming over. Would you come to the door the way you're dressed? I don't think so. We put a lot of care into looking our best for our girlfriend. So I think just taking 5 minutes, I'm not telling you to go all out and do anything spectacular, but make him feel that he's valuable enough for you to look good. All right. Tell us about a healthy relationship. A healthy relationship is all about having this husnadhan for each other, right? It's harmonious. You anticipate the needs of one another. You overlook, you forgive. You know, sometimes I find individuals who are just, they just get stuck on one point and they hammer it and they beat it to death. And that is not going to help the relationship. So if you want to have a healthy relationship, try to seek the best, bring out the best, and ask yourself, what can I do to make my spouse happy? And go in it to give. If you're in it to give and not just to get, then you will definitely have a very healthy relationship, inshallah. How can we show our husbands more respect? Okay, I'm sure the husbands are cheering at this point, okay, because that is the number one complaint that men have, that I am not given enough respect. And you know what it is? What I have found is that not that the wives are not necessarily showing respect, they're showing respect the way that they have received respect. Like, that is the rules of their relationship, is, let's say, expressing themselves. While in the husband's relationship, rules of relationship is maybe staying quiet. You know, so you have to communicate with your spouse, and it's different for each person. So I can't sit there and I can give you some of the rules of the relationship so you can be respectful in general, but then you need to have that communication with your spouse and say, how can I make you feel more respected? And this is what I do in therapy session. I ask them, because a man will obviously say, almost always says, I'm not respected enough. I need more respect. So I tell him, you know what? Give me behaviorally, what things can your wife do so that you feel respected? Because it's different for every man. Now, obviously, it goes without saying that being respectful means not calling your spouse names. Okay, if you say you're stupid, you're an idiot, you don't know how to do anything, I know that a lot of spouses do this, that's not showing respect. If you're yelling, that's disrespectful. So talking in a nice manner, showing love for his family, regarding what he's saying, right? Listening, because a lot of men will say, well, I don't feel respected because she doesn't listen to anything I say. What I say is just, you know, it's just not valued. So listening, making him feel heard, and making him feel valued. Okay? Okay, it is hard to find a good resolution and solve the conflict. Okay, I think we got this one already. How can we show our husbands more respect? We got that. If we have an issue, I want to talk, forgive, and forget. My spouse otherwise stays quiet, and that makes me very frustrated. Okay. This is a trend amongst men. They may not want to confront. A lot of times when an issue happens, right? Like, I just had a client express to me that, you know, I come back, let's say I come back from work and I'm tired, I'm exhausted, and something has been simmering inside the wife, and so he comes in and is like, boom, we have to solve this problem. It's not the best time to solve it. So you may just want to pick a better time. Don't attack him right when he's not going to want to come home. He's going to become this workaholic, or he's going to be a volunteer-aholic at the masjid and never come home, because I know what's waiting for me. If I come, I'm going to be attacked, I'm going to be confronted, and then we have to go through an hour discussion. He says, give your man the space, let him unwind, let him, you know, find a good timing, and then don't go for a long period of time. I find that a lot of, as women, we have a need to talk twice as much, maybe 10 times as much as the man. And I see it on the faces of the men when there's a therapy session and the wife goes, and he goes into this like stare, like he's no longer there. He's just like, oh my God, when is this going to end? So I train the sisters, you know, be succinct, be short. Be simple. Talk about one thing. Don't drag things from 10 years ago. And don't list the 10 things he's done wrong. One point, keep it short, you'll keep his attention. But if you want to go on, and a lot of men will tell me, oh my God, she takes me in the room and she'll talk for an hour and I can't take it. So don't do it that way. I'm sure that's one of the reasons why he doesn't want to confront, because like, he knows what he's in for. 5 minutes, short discussion, keep it brief, keep it sweet, end it quickly, let go and move on. Some discussions obviously will take longer than 5 minutes, but you get the point. Don't go on and on, discuss one point at a time. Okay. I am morbidly obese and I feel ugly. My self-esteem is extremely low. I'm letting this get to me so much that I know it bothers my husband, and he hates when I say that about myself. How can I handle this emotionally? Well, I think that it's important that you recognize this and you're seeing how it's affecting you. And that's why it's so important to take care of yourself. And like in the first pillar, of my program is all about self-development. It's like about working on yourself, because if you're not happy with yourself, whether that's physically, like you're talking about, or whether that's academically or emotion, whatever it is that's holding you back, it's going to affect the relationship. And I'm sure your husband, you know, loves you and doesn't want to hear you badmouth yourself. And a lot of women do that, you know, and a lot of women will be like, am I fat? Does this look bad? And they're drawing the attention of their spouse on their shortcomings, where they really should be actively doing something to either change their condition or not, you know, or accept it, right? There's one of two things. You can either, you know, I don't know what measures you've taken to try to change your situation, because I know of really effective ways and healthy ways of losing the weight. And that's something that I've worked with and with my clients. You know, so many of my clients have lost, you know, over 35 pounds, 30, 40 pounds, and it's quick, easy, and healthy. So you either take that approach where you get motivated and you take action, or you accept yourself and you decide that, you know what, this is how I am. And I have some friends who are completely okay with their size, because that's, you know, they've tried, they weren't able to lose the weight, the husband accepts them. But it's really a matter of you accepting yourself, right? Because a lot of times the man will be like, you know, I'm okay with it. I'm not telling her she needs to lose the weight, but she herself is not able to accept that. So I think it's important to do your best to see how you can change that situation and then accept any limitation that you may have. What if your spouse never saw his wife and child since he was born? He's now 9 years. He lives in another country. All he does is gives hope to see his wife and kids for 9 years. What should a wife do? Okay, that's a very difficult situation. I mean, you really need to reevaluate the setup. I can't imagine a father not wanting to see his son or his wife for 9 years. I think there's something critically wrong in this picture. I think it's a crisis situation. I think you may need the help of a professional to understand what is actually going on, because it's not normal. It's not normal for a husband to be away for this long and not to be concerned about the kids. So I would take this up and try to come up with a solution, because I think you're living in limbo, and it's not fair. All right. Okay. So I think we are just about done. All right. How to make my spouse feel appreciated and welcomed at home? Oh, great question. I do dress up and welcome him with a smile. We do hug when he comes home. I see this exhausted face. I know how long, he has a long day, long commute, just looking for his genuine smile towards me, and that he likes the effort I put for him. Well, that's beautiful. That's great, sister, that you are making that, you're taking effort, you're making effort to look your best, to greet your spouse. I think just, you know, with your words, just saying that, you know what, I really appreciate it. Maybe a small massage. I suggested that to one of the clients where he has a very demanding job. He's a physician. And I suggested as a way for him to wind down is to give, you know, a brief massage. And he was so happy about that. I think just making your spouse feel like you really appreciate what he's doing, and asking him again, you know, I don't think there's a lot of guesswork. You don't need to guess. You need to share, and you need to talk and find out. Just see, what is it? How can I ask him? You know, I see that you're having a really long day, and I really feel bad. I want to make you feel more relaxed. I want you to feel appreciated. What can I do to make you feel appreciated? A guy will melt if he hears that, if he realizes that his wife cares enough, because most, you know, some brothers tell me, I come home, my wife doesn't even look at me. She doesn't even smile. It's like, you know, it's just this look, and maybe grumbling and maybe yelling. So if you're conscientious enough that you're taking those extra steps, just follow it up by asking some questions as well. So Jazakallah Khair for tuning in to Ramadan Remedies for Your Marriage. Inshallah, we'll have our next session on Tuesday, 4 p.m. Central. Please share with your family and friends, like this, and pass it around and let more people benefit, because this is, you know, this is the time where we're all working on ourselves, we're all getting spiritually cleansed. So let's put all that positive energy into our marriage. And remember, always have husna dhan. Think well of Allah and think well of your spouse. Jazakallah khair. Salaam alaikum.